This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 190, Crazy to the Max. Hello and welcome to the 2018 edition inaugural episode of GamesAtWork.biz. Hi, it's Michael Martin, along with my co-host, co-founder, and co-awesome buddy, Michael Rowe, that you heard woohooing.
Woohoo!
I'm still woohooing. I am
still woohooing.
Woohooing after all these years. It is 2018, and this is, what, season 7 of GamesAtWork.biz?
Season 7. It's amazing they've renewed us for another year.
I know. Can you imagine that? What were they thinking?
What were they thinking, indeed?
Oh, so is this a very special season?
I don't know. It's every
this week on a very special episode of Blossom.
Yeah, we're going to have the Hallmark Channel version of GamesAtWork.biz before you know it. Are we ready to start this year? I think we are. There is tech. There is augmented reality. There are games. There's work. There's all kinds of things going. So let's get right to it, shall we?
We shall.
Very first article of the year comes from Macworld, no surprise. And it's about the HomePod. Again, no surprise. And I have a big struggle. And
yes.
My big struggle is I must be missing something. So the article here about...
Are you missing your HomePod?
Well, yeah, and there's no place like home is the title for this article from Dan Morin, so that's pretty awesome.
But you have an Alexa, right?
No.
You don't have a Google Assistant?
No.
What about Cortana?
No.
Oh, man.
I have Siri.
Who are you?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But you don't have the HomePod.
I have a Siri on my watch and on my phone and on my iPad and on my Mac. And it's the same Siri on all of them, which is kind of fun and interesting. And here's the thing I'm struggling with. The digital assistant device, which is a wireless speaker from all the ones that you just rattled your way through. I kind of get it. I understand it. But I'm carrying around, or I have within voice distance, a device almost at all times where I could say the magic, hello, my friend, the digital assistant, which will wake it up and then allow me to ask a question like, what is the 16th digit of pi, if I just needed to know. And the thing I'm struggling with the most is, why is it so important to have these little hockey puck things or little device things in the home tethered to an electrical outlet and redundant to the phone, the iPad, the computer that I have within voice distance all the time? I'm missing something. I don't know what it is. What is it?
Well, these are plugged in.
Yeah. So that
you don't have to worry about it running down its battery because it's listening all the time.
Yeah. So, I don't get it. I understand wireless speakers. There's a lot of benefit for that. And if I wanted to say, hey, can you please play me from, Queen, their favorite hits, right? And they would start rolling out of that wireless speaker. That'd be awesome. But I can do that for my phone already. And it's not as good as it when it comes through my stereo. So yes, there's an advantage there. But I don't quite get it.
But you can do that with your Mac and iTunes, which are set up to AirPlay automatically to your nice high-end stereo speakers, right?
I mean, I can set that for my Apple TV to replicate what's on the Mac. Yeah, so absolutely. In the ecosystem, I'm a happy person in the ecosystem. And okay, yeah, for all that to work, I actually have to turn on the receiver amplifier box, which is plugged into the TV, plugged into the Apple TV, blah, 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 and get that to go. So that is an extra step. Okay. But again, I mean, I can still talk to these devices. So I don't understand why it's so ultra deluxe cool to have the little Google Home thing or the little Alexa thing as a separate device.
Does everyone in your house have a device that gives them this capability?
Yeah.
Well, then you're not the target.
I guess not.
But I tend to agree with you. I mean, I use Siri on my phone, mm-hmm. sometimes on my watch, usually to like set reminders right. or set a timer.
Absolutely.
Right? I love that. I only use it for music when I'm driving and I don't want to butz with the device.
Right.
I'll say, hey, play album X by artist Z. Right. So what would be the one feature that they could add to one of these devices that would make it worthwhile?
I guess it never runs out of batteries. Maybe that's the thing.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the thing.
Which is the first thing I thought about when you started going through this. I was like, well, even when I use my phone for it, I end up turning on only respond if you're plugged in, right? Because I want to minimize the battery usage. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's the secret. I pay $400 or $200 or $50 or whatever the Dot or Pod or Assistant is, right? In order to plug it in.
Right. So, okay, so a couple of things. So thing one.
So here's an idea. So if you already own something like a Sonos, you know, Sonos has recently added capability to an existing audio system to respond to voice.
Right. They have an Alexa plugin, essentially.
Yeah. So maybe if you lead with voice, if you lead with the speaker for some other usage and then you add voice, that makes more sense to you than leading with the voice and attaching it to a speaker.
Maybe. Again, the working assumption here is I don't have my watch or my iPhone, my iPad, any computer somewhere within voice distance of me. If I were in a, you know, Faraday cage room removed from everything else, there you go.
Well, you've added one other thing, and everyone in your home is in that same situation.
Well, yes. I mean, I care more about me than everybody in the home right now.
I won't tell.
Yeah, don't let them know. But, you know, maybe there are a game. Maybe there's a game that could be played, right? That game requires a central device where everybody can interact with that device via voice. And maybe there's some sort of version of Spoons or something where it has to identify and prioritize the answers. And then, you know, you have your own game show sort of thing going on.
Well, I've heard, I think it's the Google Assistant. I think it's Google now allows for support of different voices. So when you say, hey, G, check my calendar.
Right.
If it recognizes your voice, it'll tell you what's on your calendar. If it recognizes your wife or your kid, it would recognize them.
But what if you could play a game like You Don't Know Jack? And remember that one?
Yeah, there actually is a game. I want to say Alexa did that. And then you get the little buttons, which are additional pieces of hardware that you buy.
Oh, that you like buzz in with?
Yeah. Mm. I think there's an Alexa skill for that.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, maybe there's something like that. So the timer thing, you kind of brought that up. And I do use Siri quite a lot for timers. And the challenge is when I need to have more than one timer going at a particular point in time, that is a problem, right? So if I'm
not cooking for Alexa,
some bacon and I do some other stuff.
I think Alexa or Google, because I heard about this recently. You can say, hey, G, or hey, A, set an egg timer for 3 minutes. Set a bacon timer for 12 minutes. And it'll go beep, 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 eggs ready. Or egg timer complete or whatever. I don't know. I don't have one of those.
Well, that would be pretty good. Well, what I wanted to share with you, though, was a little...
But then again, that doesn't solve your problem because you could still do it with your phone.
Right. Exactly. And the thing I wanted to share with you and with our audience here is a little app that I discovered not too long ago called Multi-Timer. And this allows you to have multiple timers all running concurrently with a visualization so you can see them all going at the same time.
Ah, cool.
So if I'm brewing my coffee and cooking my eggs and cooking bacon all at the same. There you go.
Yes.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So we probably won't figure this out here, but it's been puzzling me till my puzzler was sore about why are these things flying off the shelves and are that cool.
Yeah. And I'd like to kind of throw a poll out to our audience to see how many people in our audience use some in-home speaker device that they can talk to. And if so, which ones? What are they like?
Right. And
why?
It's the in-home digital assistant / speaker and why.
Yeah.
Because like the Sonos, the Alexa free Sonos is, I think it's Sonos One, is like $150 at this point. So that could be pretty cool. Like if you wanted to play music and stream it in a room that is remote from other rooms, or you want to have your podcast following you around the house, you know, that would be kind of cool. And you could get that today. All right. Well, let's leave this one for the moment. But interesting subject around the HomePod and when it comes out. My speculation is there's something more. There's one more thing it's going to do that we don't know what that is just yet. And we'll see what that is when it does arrive. So next on the list, and this might be a little old news, but it's not super old news. It just happened, last year, right? You know, barely last, news. Anyway, Magic Leap finally has revealed its new AR headset. And this AR headset is kind of an interesting look, I would say.
Yeah, and the reason we didn't talk about this last year was it's supposed to be available early 2018. So we're in 2018 now, we can talk about it.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So I do find it interesting because if you look on their website, the back of the glasses look like they have additional sensors pointing back towards your face.
Right.
Much more than what you've seen in other things like Google Glass, right? So these are pretty funky looking.
Yeah, I mean, I was noodling around on the Magic Leap website to just check on all this and kind of get a sense of where it is. And one of the things that they have in their reason for existence, after you get past the pull the web out of the screen, is this notion of displays on demand. And I remember reading, some ad copy somewhere that there was some, in-flight catalog magazine that said, when you put these glasses on and connect them to your video device, it's like you're having a 128-inch screen TV right in front of you.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of those? Both at CES as well as Macworld years ago. And basically, you had this big thing blocking your whole face, and right. Then it would show you up-close video screens.
So wouldn't it be interesting to consider how augmented reality could be the way of saying you don't need to have a screen hanging on your wall anymore? You just put on the glasses and your screen is in your field of vision where you want to see it. And it can be either a screen that is now totally immersive, IMAX-y sort of thing, or it could be like the noise-canceling headsets that allow some noise to pass through so you can kind of pay attention to what's going on around you. It could be sort of quasi-transparent, and you can do all that with the screens of what you're watching as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. The thing that I am really amazed by the announcement here is that there was all this FUD and noise about the fact that the Magic Leap setup required this big backpack mm-hmm. in order to work. What they actually show is a belt clip now that's a little bit smaller than a mobile phone,
yep.
which is much more in line with what I would expect for something once it gets productized. Of course, in the prototype stage, you'd have this huge thing because you're trying to test everything out. But once you get the design set, you now work on packaging and aesthetic design, and this is what you get. So I think conceptually, this makes a lot more sense. And I like the use case that you're talking about. And I think it reflects some of the stuff that they're showing on displays on demand, because that's what you're talking about. But I like the idea of changing the glasses to opaque to do like movie mode.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Sensitive.
Yeah. So you could watch movies.
Tip of the hat to the Magic Leap guys here again, too, for the nice little animation once you sign up for, hey, tell me when you're shipping.
Oh, did you sign up?
Yeah.
Because I was going to, and I hadn't yet.
Well, when you do, you'll see what I'm talking about on their little animation page. So very super cool deluxe stuff there.
I just clicked the button. Welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard.
Ooh. It floated.
Yep.
That was it?
That was it.
That's really cool. Yay.
All right.
I guess we'll have to order two.
Yeah, well, yeah, one for the week and one for the weekends, really, whatever.
So speaking of cool tech, you had found Finn. So what's Finn?
Yes. So Finn is a human/machine learning assistant. So as long as we're talking about all the other assistants out there, this is part of the whole machine learning bot kind of structure. And looking at ways to get a digital assistant that can do more than set an egg timer or get the 14th inch of pie or tell you who wrote what song, but to do real assistant sets of tasks, booking hotels, understanding real preferences, all this and a whole heck of a lot more. And what I was really interested to know about all this is how their process is working between machine learning and humans and looking to augment one with another in order to get things done faster and then to do more on behalf of you to accomplish tasks that are significantly complex. Right.
Yeah.
But useful.
This to me looked like a bot interface to TaskRabbit.
Yep.
If you remember TaskRabbit, right?
I do.
Or Mechanical Turk or any of those services. And it's kind of the next logical evolution of leveraging the bot to do that and then machine learning to assist the people who are then dealing with the task. What I don't like, maybe that's too strong. It's definitely a very niche offering right now. It's $1 a minute to actually do the service. And they were talking about, you know, trying to get a dinner reservation over the holidays cost them $150.
Right.
Okay. Just because, boy, that was a lot of hard work and it took a while. Well, if you charge people that rate, I think it's definitely niche. There's a couple of competitors that they talked about. One that charges 50 cents.
Right.
And I think what you end up doing is setting an expectation on skill and expertise and then driving your business model on how much profit do you want to get? Because as you become more and more effective on the machine learning side, the amount of time should go down.
Mm-hmm.
But when you set an expectation that it takes 5 minutes to set up the reservation.
Right.
Right. It just seems like a really good opportunity to pour money out of your customers.
it's a value for time proposition that you've got to make that judgment call. And for a service like this to really work, you've got to be able to get more than a dollar's worth of value per minute out of the service.
Yeah. And especially when you consider there's a $120 per month subscription fee.
Right. Right. I mean, granted, if you're able to get enough use out of it, then you're on the plus side, potentially.
Well, I think if you're able to afford a $120 a month service subscription for something that you use only a couple of times a month,
right?
Then you believe the value of your time is high enough to justify that. To get this to mass market adoption, you're going to have to drop it down to where people are spending $10 a month in fees and services instead of, say, $150 or more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great niche offering for people who have that amount of cost for their time. I just don't see a large adoption on this anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't see it either. The price point is high. The number of people that are involved is high, and we're not yet sophisticated enough to be able to have bots talking to bots to quickly get to the results, those outcomes that you would be willing to pay for. Being able to do your dinner reservation using OpenTable or something like that shouldn't take, you know, 10 minutes. So this is an interesting piece of work that, like you said, you've got TaskRabbit, you've got Mechanical Turk, you've got all these things that have been around for a while. And now what's really different here and how does this service work that will get real value fast?
Yeah, because ultimately, if you price this out, and this is in the comments, so I can't take credit for it, you're paying somebody $60 an hour to run your errands. It's $1 a minute. It's a $60 an hour wage.
Well, with 120 minutes minimum, right? So that's
right. With 2 hours a month minimum.
2 hours a month minimum, and there is a sense to that, right? You know, we would sometimes hire drivers in the days before Uber, and a 2 hour minimum for a driver seemed like a reasonable thing when you're going to be paying $10, $12, whatever it was per hour. Someone wasn't necessarily going to drive you for 10 minutes and then wait, not being paid, and then drive you again for another 10 minutes. That just seemed a little strange, which,
yep,
ta-da, that's why we have Uber now, right?
But think about it. If I want to get something valuable out of this, and they give an example of, hey, I'm moving between locations, please move all my utilities.
Right.
Well, the amount of data you have to provide.
And share and
can,
trust.
And share and trust, yeah. That then can be captured, mined, and leveraged is just phenomenal. So what's a little bit easier than that, that is in this same space? You found Filled.
Yes, Filled. Well, so we go from Finn to Filled, and this was super intriguing when I saw this. You know, the deal is you have an app on your phone. You leave your gas flap for your car or your truck open. So hopefully it's not mischief night and you don't have, you know, hoodlums around that want to
sugar, in your,
sugar
gas
in your gas tank. Yeah, you got it.
Hey, you got a quarter of a tank. Now you don't.
Yeah, well, people aren't siphoning stuff as much as they used to. Anyway, you use the app. You say, I'd like to have my car filled up with gasoline. I don't have time to stop at a gas station. You tell the app where your car is, you know, or it can actually tell from geopositioning, and when you would like to have it filled up and agree to pay for it. And the filled truck will come along and top off your gas tank, and when you return to your car, everything's been locked, closed, and so on, and you're ready to rock and roll.
And this one actually had a really good price point, because what they did is they check the price of 3 gas stations near the location of your car and give you one of their rates, plus I think it's like a $3 delivery fee.
Yep. So to me,
so this one has a huge opportunity to grow to a large number of people who don't have time. The problem right now is, like any startup, it's geographically limited, and I think it's just in San Francisco.
Right. Now, if I were these guys, one of the things that I would want to do pretty quickly is to partner up with car rental companies. So not only do I have a car that I'm renting from a car rental company, that car will always be topped up because I will contract with these guys to go and fill up those cars overnight while they're at the hotel or whatever, and I don't have to worry about gas ever, period, end of story.
No, I like that idea.
This is just really neat. And it was reminding me a little bit too, Michael, of remember the Amazon delivery option where they would pop your trunk and deliver goods to the trunk of your car because they were able to get a digital key to go do that?
No. I know the one that they were trying to do of pop your front door because they had a digital lock and key.
I mean, there's been versions of that too where you would have a
I
locker.
I don't remember the one in the car.
Yeah, but there was a version of that. We'll have to see if I can find it. There was a version where I think it was a partnership with Audi or somebody like that where the digital key would be shared permission-wise as a one-time deal with Amazon. And they would deliver whatever they were delivering to the trunk of your car because they knew where the car was. They knew how to get into it, And I could see where the same digital key concept would work here too, because leaving your gas tank, you know, in easy manipulable space is not exactly my happiest scenario. But
no, and I was thinking, you know, what if you wanted the ability to pop the gas tank, right? So I know on my car, when you unlock the car, that's when you can open the gas tank. So for me to pop the gas tank to do that requires me to leave my car unlocked.
Oh, you can't just leave the fuel filler door ajar?
I'd have to unlock the car, open the door, and lock the car, which then means they can't close it.
Oh, that's right, because it puts the little thing through.
Yes.
Yep. True. So, small matter of programming for the future.
Smop.
Right? Smop. All right, so we're moving from AR to AI to gasoline delivery. Now let's go right back into the Twitterverse and talk about a way to experience Twitter storms. This is an article you found, Michael.
Yeah, I thought this was really cool. So we now have 280 character tweets, and people still have the desire to write very, 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 long. Very, 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 very long tweet storms.
Yep.
So there's a Git repo with a Patreon project attached to it for a Chrome extension. Got all that? You follow it?
Yep.
That allows you to right-click on a tweet in a tweet storm, and it basically turns it into a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
Strings it all together, identifies how it's all broken apart, but turns it into a nice single page readable format. I thought this was really cool.
Yeah, because I sometimes have this challenge too when I'm just scrolling through, you know, here's number 17 of 22. Okay, scroll. So I like it. And it's unroll is what the concept here is, unrolling the tweets, right?
Yes. Yes. And there's a nice link on the article page that takes you to their trending page where they show you like the top key unrolls that are going on. And you can click on it and it shows you the page that it would generate.
Neato.
Yeah, simple. And if you think about it, it's a great way to monetize Twitter, but not by Twitter. Because if you unroll, it's going to take to a page that is created, which could then have ads.
Right. Same content, more ads.
More ads.
Or different ads.
Just what you want. Same content, more ads.
So thinking about other monetization angles, I've been a big fan of Sid Meier's Civilization and played it lots over the years. I have not played it recently because it is a long game to play, but I was pretty excited to see that there's been a full port for the iPad, and the price point's pretty high. I mean, it is a box price point game, even though the launch was $30 and the full version is $60. So that's not exactly small change here, but it's really neat to see that the whole Civ environment will work on an iPad, so you can experience the whole thing in the gloriousness that is the iPad Pro.
Yeah, I think I stopped playing Civ at like Civ 4, and there's been other ports for the iPad, but they were like, they're quick versions of Civs.
Yep.
And this looks fantastic. It's beautiful. They've done a really good job of mapping the UI to finger gestures as well as, you know, three-finger touch, etc. So, nice. And I really don't have a problem with a game of this caliber deciding to sell it across multiple platforms at the same price point.
Yeah. Well, especially if there's no extra, you know, ads and extra dollars and cents you need to put into it to play the game.
Yeah. Because I get so tired of all the extra, oh, you want to play Chapter 2? Here's a $5.99 in-app purchase.
Yeah, exactly.
But.
Exactly.
Speaking of old stuff showing up cool again, I found out yesterday, I think it was, that Animaniacs is coming back online for season 2. Yay. At Hulu. Do you watch Hulu?
No.
Me neither. I'm so bummed about that. It's like, why? No, put it somewhere I have it.
Yeah, you know, this is the fun of the multitude of paywalls, right?
Yep.
So you've got some things that are in Hulu, some things that are in Netflix, some things that are going to be in Amazon Prime, some things that'll be in other places. So with all the moaning and complaining that we've done about, hey, we just want to unbundle and unpack what is, you know, all these channels so we can see what we want and only pay for what we want. Now we have pay contracts for Animaniacs on Hulu and the new Star Trek and.
Yeah. Too many paywalls. But they have Pinky and the Brain.
That's right. They do, don't they?
Yes. They even call it out in the article saying there's new Pinky in the Brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And Elmira in the Brain, too. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, awesome. I mean, I'm looking forward to this, and I'm going to hopefully get a chance to see more.
So I know we are just about out of time.
Right.
So are you playing anything fun?
Nothing really new. I'm kind of reviewing my what is taking my time and not giving me enough benefit out of it to determine what I'm going to stop playing. So I'm kind of going through that culling of the herd, so to speak. Yeah, how about you? Are you playing anything fun?
The only thing I picked up, we talked about this last year, was the app InstaSaber.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an AR app, and it's currently free with in-app purchases. But you take a rolled up piece of paper and you hold it out in your hand in front of you and you tap the screen and it turns into a lightsaber. And then in AR, you can move it around and go vroom, 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 vroom,
vroom. It's pretty cool looking. Oh, cool. I'm seeing it right here.
Yep, it looks cool. I didn't get to choose the blade color, so I got a green one.
Oh, so it gives you what it's going to determine you're going to get, right? Whatever you get is what you get.
The only one I've gotten is green. Now, if you get it, and it also shows green, and somebody else gets it, and it also shows green, maybe they just do green unless you pay, and then you get colors.
Ah, maybe. Well, I'm downloading it right now, Michael, so I can let you know.
You have to let me know. Later today. You also have to make sure that your arm can extend to 2 feet away from the camera. So if you have short arms, T-Rex could not use this.
T-Rex could not. Yeah, that's not surprising, I suppose. And but it worked. It's kind of cool.
I haven't tried that. That's a good question. Yeah. We'll have to get together over coffee and both use the app and see if both of us have swords.
That will be super fun.
Yeah, very cool.
All right. Oh, I have to enable the camera, enable the microphone, and enable saved photos.
Yum.
Interesting. So have you? Yes, you have, because we've talked about this.
In detail.
All the microphone stuff. It's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's his monetization model?
Everything.
I want it all.
Yep.
Well, welcome back to 2018 and gamesatwork.biz. We loved hearing from you over the holidays and all the feedback we got last year. And we look forward to more feedback this year over at gamesatwork.biz.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.